Welcome, my name is Sharon and I serve the village as education coordinator. I'm going to run up and make more copies, so no fear, these will come down. Come back. It's my pleasure, first of all, thank you for finding the rescheduled, and I think we're on the right track now with no other faculty are going down. I'm just making that statement, right? Probably shouldn't have said that out loud. But it's my pleasure to introduce Ben and Beth Stewart. Beth just finished her doctorate in public nursing at Rush University, right? And Ben is a former Holden pastor and now is a professor at LSTC in worship and advanced studies and Holden board member. So welcome. I love your title, Passes Yet Untrodden, How Change Theory Can Help You Reform Your Body, Your Spirit, and the World Around You. Thank you much.
Thank you.
We're going to leave the doors open if it doesn't get noisy just for that breeze through.
Well, thank you all for coming. I have this little microphone on, which I'm not totally comfortable with, but I'll get used to it. So.
Turn it up.
Turn it up? I'll try to speak more loudly. I don't know that I have control over it. Okay. That's supposed to be the other way. Okay, is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, I do have a soft voice, I've been told. So I'm Beth, and this is a topic that I love because I'm a nurse. And as many of you know, nurses do a lot of work with people to try to change their behaviors. So I spent most of my career in the emergency room, and I always say I spent it in the emergency room not because I like critical care, because I actually hate it, but because I do love the public health of that. And in our healthcare system, unfortunately, the emergency room is the place where, you know, many people come for their primary care. So we have a lot of opportunity for educating people there. So actually now I'm working as a director of nursing in a skilled care center. So while I was doing sort of personal change with the emergency room nursing, I do a lot of system change now where I am now. And then as part of my doctoral work, I spent a lot of time in a substance abuse treatment center for women. So I really thought a lot about how to change behavior. And one of the most interesting sort of pieces of evidence that I came up while I was there was that actually they found, and there's not a ton of research on this here, there's a lot in Australia, interestingly, but they found that if people in treatment for substance abuse, even heroin, can change one other health behavior while they're in treatment, they stay sober a lot longer after. So why that is, we're not really totally sure, but that seems to be the way of it. And actually the VA is doing a lot of work in that right now. So that's sort of where my interest and hopefully expertise comes from. Today we're going to talk a little, did you want to say a little bit? Okay, today I'm just going to go through some of my, there's lots of change models and theories and that sort of thing. I'm going to go through just a few of the ones that I think are most relevant and easiest and most helpful to people. But before we do that, I wonder if people would be willing to share with the group maybe something you're trying to change in your personal life. I my guess is there's going to be some patterns here because it seems like it's about a lot the same. But if people don't mind sharing, even if you don't share, think of it, but hopefully some people will share. Yes?
Being more tolerant.
More tolerant. Okay. So maybe
like waiting in lines and other, you know, people, and I'm always on a fast pace, so it's,
okay,
I try to be fast, and I'll just say, like, if you go to the bank and the lady's having a conversation with the other lady in front, I just like to say, you know, get her number and call her at home.
All right, gotcha. So slow it down a little.
Yes.
Be more mindful. We'll right. Put that up there, mindfulness. Mm-hmm. All right, what else?
To face conflict?
Wow, these are not the typical ones, but we can do it. Some of these we might talk to about tomorrow. All right, what else? Yes.
Less time on social media.
All right, there's one. Less social media. What else?
Avoidance or procrastination.
Okay. I'm going to put procrastination. Well, avoidance is procrastination. How about flossing? Anyone? What else?
Get handouts back to the nurse.
What's that?
If she's still passing, step out.
Oh, there's some handouts coming. Okay.
If I need more, I'll run up.
Exercise.
Exercise. That's one that lots of people seem to have. Any more?
Eat more bacon.
More meditation? What's that?
Daily.
Daily.
We're talking about that a lot tomorrow.
We are, yeah. I'm going to put one up there that nobody's saying, but less alcohol. And the culture up here is, in the Northwest, is not so much, but I know where I live, less smoking is one that people, anything more?
More sleep.
More sleep. These are the fundamentals. Sleep, exercise, food. All right, that's a good start. So have those in mind, or whatever's in your mind as we go through this. I'm going to use some of these maybe as some examples as we go through some of these models. Because models, I think, especially when you see these, can look weird. And like, you're like, what does this mean? But we're going to go through them. So this is the an example of a socioeconomic model. Often there will be one more level that's like organizational, but this was the best picture I could find. So this basically talks about the level of influence that these different ripples have on the way that we are as people and the way that we change. So say we take one of these, like let's take eating, let's take our diet. So individual level, it might be your knowledge about food. So how many people here know that it's best to eat 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day and that you shouldn't eat any sugar? Now, how many of you, keep your hands up if you know it, how many of you do that? Right. So knowledge is not, the knowledge is important on the individual level. So this is also your beliefs that are informed by how you were, you know, grow up and that sort of thing. The next level is your relationships. So this can be like two different ways I like to think about this. This can be like when you're trying to eat healthy and your wife keeps snacks in the house.
Yeah.
So that's how your relationships affect that. But this can also be helpful if you're a person who your relationship with other people helps you to make changes. This could be like if you have a buddy that can help you keep track. You can think about that as you're making a change. So then your community, as you start to think about eating healthy, for example, where I live, they now have this thing called Tot Box. So it's fresh fruits and vegetables in a box that it's very inexpensive for people who need it. So that on a community level, people could do that if you're trying to think about that. Or a farmer's market might help people to do that. And then the societal level would be more like a law or a tax that helps people to eat healthy. So this is sort of how your different levels of relationship help you to make change or affect the way that you make change. This is a theoretical model, and nurses love this because what we use for this, these are different stages of change, and we think of this as like people need to move through these stages in order to make a change. The other thing that's really helpful for nurses and can be helpful for you as you assess where you are is that when we're creating an intervention, we need to know where people are on this in order to create the change. So if you start at the top, pre-contemplation, this is a point where people don't have any intention of changing. Let's take smoking. People are like, I like this. This is good. It's good for my social life. I have no intention of changing. So at this point, it doesn't do any good to have them journal or start keeping track of how many cigarettes they're smoking because they're not intending to change. This might be a good place actually for some information, some scare tactics, things like that. I don't know. Contemplation, we think of pre-contemplation as no, they don't have any desire to change for the next 6 months. Contemplation is like, in the next 6 months, I might make a change. So at that point, the intervention might be like, let's provide you with some resources that might help you. Let's provide you with some more information. Let's really encourage you in that decision. Preparation is actually, in 30 days, I expect to be smoking less or not at all. So at this point is where you have a lot of control, not control, I shouldn't use that word, but a lot of influence for people. And this is where you get them into a program, you get them everything they need, and that's where you start handing out forms for them to start keeping track and sit with them and counsel with them. And then the action is when they're sort of, they've done it, they've quit smoking. So at this point, support groups are still important. And this is when you start practicing for maintenance, which is to keep it going on. And then I love this model because it has the relapse. And in any change, I think this is where we really lose it. When you've been on a diet, you've been trying to eat healthy, you have a bad day, you have a bad week, and you're like, that's it, it's over, I can't do this. But if we think of relapse as actually part of the process, and it's going to happen. People who are addicted to opioids, we think of their relapse as part of their program, part of their process. It's not a failure. Well, it is a failure, but it's not a big failure. It's part of the change. And then you look here, this upward spiral, you learn from each relapse. And we'll do a little exercise later to talk about that. But that learning from each relapse is really important. I have a really hard time with exercise, making myself going out and doing it. I've learned from each relapse, and I figured out that really what motivates me to exercise is having a whirlpool at the end. So my next gym, I'll be looking for that. So, okay, and then this is the last one, the theory of planned behavior. And this is one that I really like for people with addiction because of this last part. But the first part up there is sort of our beliefs, again, individual beliefs, what we've learned as children, what we believe to be true. The second part, normative beliefs, subjective beliefs, is what we believe other people believe. So, say, exercise, whatever we can take. Like, we know it's important in our community. Do other people believe it's important? And does that influence us? So the first one is what we believe. The second is what other people believe. And then this part here is how much you believe you have influence. And this is where we really think that this is important. But it has to be held together with what you actually have control over. And this is what later when we're going to talk about realistic goals, I think this is really key. So for people with drug addiction, they might want to believe very much that they have control now over their family. But because of their choices, they've lost their children. So sometimes our goals need to be adjusted according to this. So holding together what we believe can happen, and we have to believe that we can change or we are never going to. So that belief has to be there, but we have to make goals that are realistic with our actual control. So that's one. So this is just a real quick popular level. So there's a lot of books on habits right now, and I've recommended two. I read a lot of them, and I don't actually enjoy reading them that much, so I did that for you. I pulled two out that I put on the back of your handout that I personally liked the most, especially the one by Gretchen Rubin. I really did like that one the most. But this is what sort of they've agreed. Like, as I read a lot of them, this is sort of what I came up that they agreed on. There's this cue, routine, reward, cue cycle. So we have a cue. You can think about this with smoking. Maybe you eat. Then you go out and smoke with your friends. Then you have the reward of both socialization plus the nicotine. And then the cue comes around again. So if we can interrupt at any of those places, we can maybe change a habit. Or when we're trying to make habits, maybe we can create some of these cycles. So that's something that people seem to agree on. Having a plan and making goals is important. So that's another thing that popular literature agrees with, actually the literature that I would look at my library. And that habits help people feel more in control and less anxious, and it limits the needs to make decisions. So that's sort of the things that they agree on. Here's some...
Can I say one of the famous ones, you know, that Obama said he had like two colors of suits in his closet because he's got a lot of big decisions to make. Mm-hmm. It's going to be this color or this color. I got other big things. So I limit the need to make decisions.
And not that this is a pattern in our household or anything, but Ben has put a curtain up over a certain part of our pantry and he's made a decision that he doesn't need anything behind that curtain. So now I can have my snacks and he doesn't need them. So there we go. So here's some open questions. Whether rewards are helpful or not, people can't seem to agree with this. For example, if I make it to the end of the week, I will have pizza. Some people say the rewards are helpful. Some people say, actually, that hinders your ability to change. This idea of limited reserve of willpower, so don't make too many changes at once because you only have so much willpower over versus sort of what I found in the addiction literature, that when you make one change, others seem to come along. I don't know. Flossing the teeth is something for me. When I'm flossing my teeth, I feel like I am powerful. I can do anything I need. But this may be...
Bed making, isn't that one?
Bed making's one that is kind of famous. And people are different, so that's why this is different. That's why I like that Gretchen Rubin book, because she acknowledges the fact that people are different, and so that is it. And then this small steps, maybe you've seen, there's a book, Nudge, where it talks about taking small steps toward your change versus what we're doing, what we have the opportunity here at Holden for, which is a blast step, which means your environment has totally changed. So how many people have better hand washing habits? So that may be something that you take home. And so here's just a few takeaways. Your background and community systems affect your habits and behaviors. All right, that's really, really important. You can make a change when you decide it is important and that you're able to do it, but let's remember, it has to be realistic to your situation. So for a lot of people, being 5'8" and 108 pounds, that is not realistic. But eating so many vegetables a day and limiting your sugar, that's a realistic goal that's going to be healthy. And this is important. Forgive yourself when you backtrack. It's an expected part of the process. How am I going to put this back?
Oh, this is the first time we've ever co-taught, and I'm intimidated. And I'm a DJ owner. So what I'm going to do now is a little kind of theological riff on some of these patterns of change. And then I'm going to see, Beth is mostly the one kind of driving this particular session. So one theory, so I'm the theology prof, right? And that the stuff that Beth has done so far is definitely not my area of expertise. But one, I like thinking about it this way. One theory in like the evolution of religion, evolutionary theories of religion, why do we have it? It's one of the theories is that it's a way to negotiate both a sense of continuity and change. How do we hold both of those together? You can think about it as life with predictable rhythms and syncopation. It's kind of planned and unplanned to that. Maybe the most obvious syncopation in the rhythms of our life is death. It's a change. It's a major change. So some people have said that particular change is what religion has especially focused on. This is from some of my ancestors, a place in Scotland, Kilmartin Glen, the Temple Wood there. Anybody been there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty powerful place, right? So it's from 5,000 years ago. It was in use continually for, we think, at least 2,000 years, and was used for burials of bodies and of cremated remains. And you can probably imagine that these stones around there, like other places are like Stonehenge, are aligned with the repeated rhythmic patterns of the earth. Sunrise at the winter solstice, moonrise at the equinox, all of these things are set with a real sense of pattern. But then these kind of syncopations of human death get entered into it. So you can think of it in some ways as a way of trying to take the changes in our lives and integrate them into the life-giving patterns of the universe, the life-giving patterns of the earth. How do we do that? Some people say that's what religion has tried to do. Even the word religion, it's the same root as the word ligament, like that will hold things together and allow the body to function well. So in some ways, you could see these places like at Kilmartin Glen, the Temple Wood, as an attempt to integrate our unpredictable lives and our choices into these life-giving patterns of the universe. So in some ways, at least for today, we can say religion might be a natural partner for change theory, since ritual and religion are both ways, in part at least, to integrate change into our habits and lives. And if you know the 12-step program, you know that there's a kind of almost abstractive religious process that's built into this very effective change program. So what would it be like to draw on our theological traditions to deepen our approach to change theory? So here's that little riff on that. Two basic ways that Christianity and Judaism have imaged change are cyclical change and linear change. So we're going to go into those. And first, let's take a look at cyclical. You can imagine a circle, or the seasons, or the course of a day, right? Change is constant, but it's cyclical. It's going to repeat itself. Yeah, if you know Harry Chapin's old folk song, "All My Life's a Circle," right? So even if you're rooted in one place for your whole life, change will come to us in a kind of cyclical way. Right? Here's the bonus theory of religion, anthropological theory of religion that's associated with this, is a locative, like located in a single place, a locative worldview. So some biblical texts that are kind of illustrative of this way of thinking. Think about that first chapter of Genesis. All these cycles, right? The earth is founded. There was evening and there was morning. The first day, there was evening and morning, the second day. Ecclesiastes is classic. For everything, there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to live, a time to die, a time to rend, a time to mend. And even in death itself is a kind of cyclical return. We return to the dust from which we were formed, and our breath returns to God who gave it. Right? For each of these two, I'm going to do like a mountain spirituality. So you can imagine if you could climb up to the top of Copper or Buckskin here and look down, pretend that we have a farm that produces for us here at Holden Village, and you could see all the waterfalls that flow down into and make this valley, your home, a fruitful place. Through all the different seasons. You can see it all from there, right? Through day and night, through growth, harvest, dormancy, and rebirth, through life and death, this good place sustains you. This, in hero mythology, this worldview is often associated with a hero who fails. So that's a little bit of maybe a counterintuitive thing, but picture Icarus, who's gonna get up out of here, but he flies too close to the sun. And so the moral of the story of the hero who fails is, hey, this place is good enough. Stay in this place where the cycles of this particular place will sustain you. There'll be changes, but there'll be pattern, right? And then I'm gonna do a couple of notes here about Passover. So the festival of Passover probably has two antecedent festivals that form as one, that come together to form as one. And this side of it was a spring barley harvest that was made into unleavened bread. Right? And you take the yeast of last year and just leave it aside. So picture early in the spring, you get this first stuff up, and you take your first fruits and say, ah, here in this land, this is a good place. The spring, the earth has provided for us again, and without anything from last year, we'll start again, and the earth gives it to us right here on these barley fields. In a bit, we'll look at the other side of that. And then a change theory connection, as Beth has already said, don't beat yourself up when you quote, mess up. It's okay to be the hero that fails. All heroes eventually fail. So the place where you are has enough grace for you, right? Grace in this season will provide growth in a later season. So Paul, we're gonna sing, can we sing What We Need?
Sure.
So here's one song that kind of has a spirituality of here, in this place, this is enough.
What we need is here.
Try that.
What we need is here. What we need is here. What we
cyclical. Now we're going to go to the other one. You can imagine a line in one direction, a path that leads out of here, an exodus. So yes, change may sometimes happen in cycles, but sometimes it's about being liberated from oppressive cycles, an interruption. It's a path out of here to a new place. So some biblical texts or motifs that go with that. Obviously, Exodus. God makes a way where there is no way, out of slavery in Egypt into freedom, and including out of exile. I'm about to do a new thing. Now it springs forth. Do you not perceive it? I will make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. I'll put up a curtain in the pantry, and you'll be able to resist the call of the chocolate. Or an angel came from God to a town called Nazareth to a woman whose name was Mary. Plenty of cycles in the Bible, but the story of the incarnation is this interruption in time that recenters and redirects history. And Pentecost, right? In the last days it will be, God declares, that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, even upon my slaves, both men and women. In those days I will pour out my spirit, and they shall prophesy. So here's that mountain spirituality image. So this time you ascend to the mountain, but instead of looking back on the place, this fertile valley that has sustained you, you look over beyond it, into the further valleys, maybe to paths as yet untrodden, places you've never seen. This is over to the promised land. You can hear it in the last speech that Martin Luther King gave, which is, if you don't know it, it's the night before he was martyred, and it is a chilling, unbelievable, it seems like something you might read in the Bible, the way he's almost prophesying his own death. But he says, I've been to the mountaintop, and I've seen the promised land. He says, I may not get there with you, but I know that we as a people will reach the promised land. So he's looking out and says, you know, this may be an individual failure, but we as a people are gonna get out of this cycle, right? And we're still on the way. Right? Sometimes in mythology, this is associated with the hero who succeeds, right? So you can picture somebody who goes out and kind of, in fact, makes it out of Egypt. Moses coming out of Egypt, at that point, he's a hero who succeeds. Of course, up on Mount Nebo, he becomes a hero who fails as well. Right? But the moral of these mythological stories is, hey, the world is a wide open place of possibility. Explore new things. Don't get stuck in old ruts, repeating the errors of the past. So here's the other side of the Passover cycle that gets joined with that other spring barley harvest. So we eat unleavened bread at Passover that comes from our own land here, the spring barley harvest. But also, what's the other big symbol you think of with Passover besides unleavened bread? Did somebody say blood? Blood, yeah. The blood of what? A slain lamb, right? So what we think is that this was an early festival when the shepherds, it was time to go migrate to the spring green pastures. And before they took this perilous journey with all the new lambs to go find the new pasture, they knew it was a dangerous journey, they would slaughter one of the young lambs and say, God, this is, we're showing that we're going to put our trust in you as we take this scary journey to a new place. So you can see the lamb slaughter is on your way to green pastures, and the spring barley harvest says here. But one says, go. Right? So these two things come together in Passover. So a change theory connection, then, it's important to believe in the possibility of change, that you can make a change, to have faith in a power that can lead you to new freedom from the things that have controlled you. And why don't we sing our song kind of quickly here? I realize I'm a little behind time. 2 minutes. Oh, actually, I've got 2 minutes. We're good. Yeah. So can we sing this next one?
Sure.
All right. So this one is written by Marty Haugen, a guy that many people know here, to be sung at Ash Wednesday, which is the season of, you've heard the word repentance. The Greek word behind that is metanoia, which means to change our way of thinking, to change our way of doing things, to turn. And so this is an invitation to say, now's the time. We're going to make that change. Put up the curtain. Go to the health club that has the jacuzzi. This is the moment.
The time of praise.
land and see what we can do a little bit. You have some handouts. Again, I don't believe in forced participation, so you can use these as you wish as we go through this. There'll be a little time where I'll actually sort of create a SMART goal. I'm also glad and love to sit with people and work on their goals, so you can catch me another time if you're interested. How many people know of SMART goals? I think a lot of people. How many have actually created one for yourself or for work?
For work.
What kind of work are you in that are you doing it?
Well, I'm retired now, but it was IT stuff.
Okay.
Teaching.
Banking.
Social work.
Okay.
Making airplanes.
Excellent. Has anybody done it for health before? Health related or personal goals? Okay. Some people have. Who has done that? You have. Excellent. Are you a nurse?
No, actually we did it in my camp.
Okay. All right, let's go through it just a little bit and talk about these SMART goals that you hear so much about, and we'll talk a little bit about why the different aspects might be important. So the S, and sometimes SMART goals, different things stand for different things, especially the R seems to be different, but this is the one that I like, makes most sense for me. But specific, say, let's just go with losing weight. Somebody wants to lose weight. And their goal is, I'm going to lose a lot of weight. How will you ever know that you've met your goal? Or I'm sure, like when I'm dealing in the hospital trying to reduce falls, if I made the goal, I'm going to reduce falls, that's my goal, and handed that in as my goal, how would I ever know if I'd met that goal? So when we're tracking, which is important, it's important to be specific. So I might decide how much I want to lose. We'll get a little bit more to the timing of that later. But I might decide a certain pound amount, or a certain pound amount a week. Or I might decide sort of I want to fit into this pair of pants, although I wouldn't recommend that one. But so the second one is a measurable, and that's why I wouldn't recommend fitting into the pair of pants, because how can you either do or you don't? You can't really measure that. But again, you want to be able to track whether you're making your goals or not, because it feels good when you make a goal. It feels really good. So it needs to be measured, and probably in things with numbers. And probably before that would be a word like increase or decrease, an action verb to make it measurable. And then attainable. So this means, again, is this realistic for you? And sometimes the R is realistic, but I don't know how to differentiate between the two. That's why I like the relevant. Is it realistic? Is it realistic and is it healthy to lose a certain much amount of weight? Like, what is healthy and what is realistic? I don't think while I was getting my doctorate degree working full-time and, you know, being with my family, that it was probably a good time for me to run a marathon. That was probably not a realistic goal for me. I would never make that goal anyway, but it was, that would not be a realistic goal. Now, walking 2 miles at night with my husband each night, that is realistic, maybe. But it's important to be realistic or you will fail, right? It's just right away, realistic. And then relevant, I love this. Because of procrastination, somebody wrote up there, or somebody said that procrastination is something that they're dealing with. So there's lots of ways to procrastinate, and one of them is to meet a bunch of irrelevant goals. So when I was writing my final paper, like I had lots of irrelevant goals, like cleaning out all of the kitchen drawers, you know, going through whatever, that was not helping me for what I needed. So relevant is also important. Is this really going to make a difference in your life? Do you really care about it? And then timely means when. And this can either be like, by next year I want to have done this, or for example, if you are trying to lose weight, I'd like to lose 1 pound every week until this time. So like, by when? Because again, if you just say, I'm going to lose a lot of weight, like that could be 10 years from now, and that's not really going to be helpful or help you to meet your goal. Does that seem clear? We'll go on. Okay, so the SMART goals, These are super helpful. I hope you found them helpful in your work. I think most people do find these helpful. I have to do the nursing process. I actually think if everybody followed the nursing process, the world would run so much more smoothly. So I apply this to every part of my life. I can't help it. I just really believe it. And I really, really want to focus on the first one of these. Assess. 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 And this is where anytime you're trying to make a change, first you need to assess, like, whether it's important, what in your life is making it difficult for that to happen? Is it something going on with you? Do you need a change of scenery? Do you need new friends? Do you need a curtain? What is the difficult? And this is where people maybe can do a lot of spiritual work, maybe even with therapy, with the work, like, really, what is causing me not to be able to make this change? So that's where the whole jacuzzi thing came in. When I assessed, like, why can't I go to the gym? And I was like, well, my motivation is actually the jacuzzi at the end. So the assessment is important in everything we do. Assess first. When I went into the women's treatment center and thought I'm ready to make a change, I thought I knew what they needed. I did. I thought I knew exactly what they needed. But what I thought they needed was not what they needed. And it took a whole, you know, year of assessment of the community to find what they needed and hearing from a bunch of different people all involved with it before I could really know what the change needed to be. Then you identify the problem. My problem is that my motivation is wrong. And then you make a plan where you develop your goals, your desired outcomes, your action plans. You implement it, and always you evaluate. How did this go? Always evaluate. Without judgment, and we're going to talk a little bit about mindfulness and meditation tomorrow, without judgment. Like, this is not a place to be judging yourself. Shame does nobody any good here. Just assess, something went wrong. So what? Things go wrong all the time. None of us are perfect. That took a long time for me to figure out that I didn't have to be perfect, but that is a freedom. And then you go back to assessing. So I just wanted to point that out. I just think that this is helpful in our lives as we make changes, but in general, like I said. Okay, then this is actually, so this is actually was developed in Australia for people with substance abuse problems. And like I said, there's been research that people with substance abuse, if they can change one behavior while in treatment, they will stay sober a lot longer. So Australia has grabbed hold of this, and this is sort of a national thing that they've done. So they're really focused, and I love these little serves of fruit, serves of veggies, smokes, because it's Australian. But I made something similar for you, only I wanted you to be free to sort of make your own on the back of your sheet there. But this is just a way, because if we keep track, if we journal what we did, for many people, this is really helpful. Whether it's a little piece of paper on the door of your closet, keeping track of your weight, or whatever. And it helps keep track of your goal, too. So I just wanted to point this out, and we can go over sort of what you have there. And then I got a little lost track. So let's try to make a SMART goal. We'll try to do it as a group. Does anybody want to have their own personal SMART goal now? Otherwise, I'll use Ben.
Let's use Ben.
Unless somebody wants to, this is your opportunity. Okay. Ben, you got a change?
Oh, goodness.
Or I'll use myself.
Let's lose weight.
Losing weight.
Yeah, let's use Ben.
Okay. Let's do losing weight. So that's our goal, but that's not specific. So somebody give me a specific amount.
10 pounds.
Okay, we're going to lose 10 pounds. I am going to lose 10 pounds. Now, does that seem realistic to people, 10 pounds?
Depends on the time period.
Yeah. Depends on the time period. Okay, so let's just add a time period. In how long?
Before Thanksgiving.
Okay, I'm going to count because I'm going to tell you what's healthy. No. Okay, so that's fine. Really, losing more than a pound a week is never healthy. Never. It's not healthy, and it's not really anything that you're going to sustain. At least that's what we think now. In case you're wondering about that, that's decreasing your calories by 200 pounds, increasing your exercise by 200 calories. Decreasing your eating 200, increasing that. It's about a pound a week for most people. Again, it doesn't work for everybody.
Per day?
Per day.
200 calories down?
Down, and 200 calories up per day equals about a pound a week. So that is by Thanksgiving. That's realistic. Okay, now we'll take that same thing. Now turn your papers over because we need to make a plan about how we're going to do this. So I've just told you that decreasing your caloric content, you know this already, and increasing your exercise is going to help you to lose, what you know, 10 pounds by Thanksgiving. So we're going to go by weekly goals. What might be a realistic weekly goal for diet and exercise? Let's do both. Because we have the knowledge, right? What are we going to do to decrease our caloric intake by 200 calories?
Max the lattes.
Yeah, there you go. Zero lattes. That'll do it. That is at least 200 calories, literally, if they're sweetened, right?
But is that realistic?
Is it? For some people it may be, and for some people it may not. There you go. So we'll just say, we'll just pretend like everybody believes, we'll just say for our pretend person, it is realistic to get rid of their lattes. What else are you doing? Here's something. What else are you doing?
No wine except for a glass on Friday night.
Okay.
Right.
No.
Get realistic.
Alcohol. on the weekdays.
She didn't say anything about scotch.
Honestly, I just changed it to alcohol. So I just want to point out, and this is something else that is really great when you're making a change. There are other benefits to both of these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Besides just losing weight, you're going to save money, and you are going to sleep better. People tell us that you're going to sleep better without the alcohol, and all sorts of changes. So it's important also to look at what other benefits are to this. So there might be some drawbacks, right? How about exercise? What are we going to do? And I'll tell you one thing about exercise is the more you can incorporate this into your daily life without making a big thing like actually going to the gym, the better it is. So what are you going to do?
Take the stairs.
Stairs instead of elevators.
Take the stairs, yeah. That's probably... Okay.
Increase the overall amount of walking.
Increase your walking, yep. And like just going for walks? Are there ways that you can think of?
Parking farther away from doors.
Okay, parking.
Is 200 calories a day, is that 2 miles essentially?
I guess I don't know that for sure. So these are all great things to do. It's going to take a variety of things, though, to equal what you need to do for the calories. I think Ben rides his bike as much as he can, far distances to work. I don't have anything like this incorporated right now, so I need to be thinking about it. But anyway, these are all steps you can take. Some of this, too, like if you can find ways to make this social, like think of ways to actually make this fun in your life. Okay, so tell me what some of the things that might help you to do this in your life, because this is the other thing we're looking on here. We're going to look at some things that might help and some things that might be barriers. So what are some things that might help with these goals?
Yeah. I guess for me what it would be is if I have a latte every single day, if I could just go ahead and have 3 lattes or 4 lattes a week rather than,
decreasing. Right. So what would help to meet your goal? Start with a decrease. Okay, what else would help?
An exercise partner to keep you accountable.
Yeah. Yep, exercise partners, yes.
Find a way to work that avoids beans.
Okay, avoiding your regular patterns. If you're a smoker and you decide to go out and take, as I call them at work, non-smoke breaks, because I don't think it's fair people get to go take smoke breaks, and I know. But if you decide to take a non-smoke break with people smoking in your regular pattern, you're probably going to smoke. So change, oh my God, go all the way up and around Chalet Hill, then you've got exercise and avoid beanies. Avoid temptation. Okay, what else?
Find satisfactory substitute.
Yeah, great.
I love fizzy water at parties instead of alcohol.
Okay.
I'll have a drink, alcohol, and do fizzy water after that.
Okay, one more? Anybody?
Less TV.
Less
watching TV and sitting in your car.
Okay, so you're thinking about less sedentary activities, which again is going to benefit something else in your life, right? Okay, now tell me what is going to make this challenge, anticipated barriers. And this is where we want to focus. Anticipated barriers.
Socializing.
All right.
Being able to drive by your coffee place without stopping.
Okay. Avoiding temptation.
Mm-hmm. How about weather? Like,
going for a while. Yep. How about one you can't control? Whether your streets are safe.
Whether it's safe to walk.
That's a hard one. That's in the community area.
You could work toward that.
What else? Injury. Oh my gosh. That's where we need to adjust
our expectations and probably adjust what we're going to do.
The illness could probably go with that.
Illness.
Necessary computer. The time spent on the computer.
Necessary use of the computer. Yeah. Okay. So, guess what we've done here? We have completed our assessment here with these two things. We've completed the first two, piece of the nursing process. We have assessed what's going to help and what barriers are. And then we can go through to some of these and start to make small changes in some of these. Does this make sense to you?
Great.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So I've given you a tool. You can adjust whatever. To start doing this for yourself. And again, I'm happy to sit and help if anybody ever feels like it. It's something I do love to figure out for other people. I'm not sure I love it for myself that much. It's a good way to start. I do want, the caveat is this. Some people have habits or have sort of created behaviors that are helping them to deal with like deep issues and problems. We know people who have backgrounds of abuse, people who have backgrounds of addiction, people who have backgrounds of pain and trauma. This is likely not going to work with them without a therapist. So I do want to say that's there. Like our behaviors are built a lot of times to support our needs. So just a little caveat in that. I don't want to make it sound sunny. I don't want to make it sound like this is easy, but there's some tools and we know it can.
And now kind of a last theological riff on this. Is Jesus a hero who fails or a hero who succeeds?
Yes.
So we have in Jesus the sign of the cross, which is, as Kurt Vonnegut, my favorite author when I was in high school, I think saved my life. If Jesus taught the world anything while he was up there on the cross, whether or not he was God, it was how to go to defeat in some kind of dignity. And just for all of us losers, we can look to Jesus and take inspiration, right? So to be kind of less jokey about it, there is mercy for all of us in the great failure of Jesus, right, on the cross. That's a sign of God's mercy for all of us, inevitable failures. That's part of God's mercy that reaches out to us just as who we are. But Jesus is also a hero who succeeds. His resurrection is like an image of an exodus to a new land. Even through the power of our little deaths and our big deaths, that we're carried into a new promised land by a power that we don't fully understand or control, but is flowing through us like a spring welling up in us. So maybe a Christian approach, I'm a religious guy, I like to pray all the time, but like sometimes it's really helpful just to do this in a totally straight up secular sense. But there's also ways we can pray through this. So a Christian approach to change theory might be to kind of use our deepest images of our faith and say, is this now, am I approaching an exodus or a resurrection moment? Or is this a moment simply to rest in grace? Like, is the realistic thing now just to say, there is enough here. What I need is here. In many ways, this is the paradox that we're washed into at baptism, that we are both washed into grace for who we are and also a liberation into what we shall be. We could use those Passover motifs. Is this a time to be here with the spring barley harvest, to stay where I am, the land provides enough, or is this a time to search for a greener pasture? I think it's interesting. One last kind of prayer that I thought of that embodies both of these sensibilities is one that you probably know. Take a note as you see here that there are paths as yet untrodden. The Exodus motif, it's a kind of liberative, let's get out of here, look to the promised land. But also, there is always enough. God's love is supporting us right here, right now. Maybe we could pray this, and then we could you could leave a little discussion. Oh God, you have
called your servants to ventures of which you cannot see the end. By paths as yet untrodden, through perils unknown, give us faith to go out with your courage, not knowing where we go, but only that your hand is leading us and your love supporting us. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
We've got about 5 minutes for discussion.
So my great idea was to have the first session on Monday, because I think Holden is a great place. I'm just going to hold this since I broke it. Holden is a great place. It's a great interruption in our regular lives, a great place to make a change, but unfortunately, this is Wednesday. So, but still, you might think, there you go. So anyway, is there a conversation or questions? Yes.
So is it easier to add something to your life, or I mean, just the change to be that I'm going to increase or take away?
I don't know. I think that's probably personal, and I think it has to do with what you're talking about. I mean, is it easier to add vegetables or take away heroin? Definitely take away or add vegetables, but is it easier to take away a latte than to add an hour of exercise? I don't know. I think it's probably personal, but yeah.
And I was going to say that with life, it can send you, or can sometimes, at least with us recently, it seems like it's just raining down misery or suffering or death.
Yeah.
And that those are not necessarily times that you should embark on something that's an unrealistic expectation. Mm-hmm. Do feel like, if you already don't feel like you have control, to add something else in there that you will not succeed at.
True, yeah, yes. And that is, I think, especially when you're in times of stress and times, like you said, of unexpected
loss.
It can definitely, there's that, what is that show where this is, oh yeah, it's Airplane, where that guy is like, hey, did you see that Airplane movie? Where he's like, this is definitely not the time to give up smoking. This is definitely not the time to give up amphetamines or whatever.
I think the right time to give up sniffing glue.
That's sniffing glue, you got it. But at the same time, those disruptions can be a time for some change. Maybe it's a spiritual change. I don't know. Sometimes we do think of disruptions in our life as a time to reevaluate and maybe make some changes. But I agree. When you're already exhausted and just trying to get through the day, it's probably not the time for something huge. Yeah. Yes.
You brought up the example before about knowing you needed to work on a paper, and yet you were cleaning out your drawers in your kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So we all sort of have those situations in our life where we want to go clean out the drawers in the kitchen when we know we need to be working on a paper.
Yeah.
Do you have thoughts about, in that moment, some ways to think about that?
So tomorrow, in the spirituality part, I'm not great at this, but we are going to talk one way that I've read and that I've heard of people having great luck is actually with some mindfulness and meditation. And I think the other thing that's really helpful with that is to have, again, a partner who can say, I don't mean necessarily a partner. This person probably should not say this to me, but one of my coworkers maybe could say, like, I've noticed that you're doing a lot of unnecessary cleaning when you need to do your, you know, what kind of. And the other thing is maybe leave the environment. That's the other thing I've read is, like, maybe you need to just leave that environment and go to the library, or I'm just thinking of myself, or coffee shop or something like that. But I think there's a lot of research and a lot of thought on how mindfulness, just like paying attention to what we're thinking and without judgment, can sort of change some of the pathways in our brains and some of the habits. But
maybe one example,
yeah.
From
the academic world, I read this study about when you're in the phase of academic writing, when you want to be thinking really big and creative, like those big, you know, the classic university libraries that are kind of, they've got, you know, all the different books on the shelves, and there's lots of wood and the chandeliers, open spaces, sometimes for people even like coffee shops that are loud, those can be really helpful for the creative side. But when you want to really drill down and be super specific in writing, like almost this tiny little cubicle of low ceilings, things around you, so that it was just a kind of environment sense of like, what do I need right now? Is it big picture? Is it hyper-focused sensory deprivation?
And I do actually believe that that's a point also where some goals, some realistic goals can be set rather than I'm going to write this whole thing tonight, but like really I'm just going to get the research on this one section done and then I'm going to clean out my drawers. I've heard also of this way of like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and you just do what you're supposed to do rather than what you're not supposed to do. And that's really helpful for some people. I mean, there's a lot of these little ways, but I think disrupting at that point is anymore. I think we're about
to.
Oh, you want to? I'd like to.
So the one tomorrow, we'll talk about kind of changing our patterns of spirituality. And especially we'll be looking at ways to integrate our own spirituality with the rhythms, the patterns of Mama Earth, right? And some classic ways and some newer ways of doing that. And then our third, you want to say it? The third session?
Okay. The third session, my favorite thing to think about is really community change. So hopefully we'll give you some skills, but also some inspiration for helping you to be able to change your communities in the larger world.
And what about the specific example I'm going to work with in that the kind of community reassessment will also include the individual, and it's the idea that to think about the way we interact with the communities of the dead, which is how do we return our loved ones to the dead. And I'm going to introduce the idea of conservation burial if you don't know about it, and actually give you some resources for these new communities of the dead that are where we bury people and they actually become thriving places of life, like little nature preserves. So that'll be one example.
One way to make change.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Happy evening.